Welcome to the Love Yourself Naked podcast. I'm your host, Chelsea Glubish, and I've been working with women for over 2 years to help them ditch the diet mentality, find food freedom, and gain a body confidence that they never knew was possible. There is so much information out there about how to eat, how to exercise, and how to live a healthy lifestyle. My goal on the show is to help answer all your questions and provide you the tools you need to live in peace with food and love your body. So if you are ready to discover what it's like to live a life without obsession, you are in the right place. Now let's get to the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today is a guest episode, and I am joined by my former business coach, friend, and I suppose like co-worker. I don't know what we would call you. Anyways, Christy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. I feel like we always talk about, and you always kind of see in the online space, is talking about how much our job is about myth busting and really just like correcting all of the wrongs that diet culture and the media have done, and just reteaching all of the things that are factual. And so I'm really excited to have you here today. Christy is a registered dietitian and a certified diabetes educator, and she is just a wealth of knowledge. So I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you. Yeah. One of my favorite things to do is myth bust, especially about something that always seems really misunderstood, which I feel like in your niche, but also in mine, there's so many things that are misunderstood. Or, you know, I'm part of like so many support groups, like diabetes support groups and stuff. And the amount of misinformation out there is almost scary sometimes. It's really upsetting, but I guess that's why we're here, to kind of set things straight and like get the education out there.
Totally. Yeah. So why don't you just give us a little bit more of an introduction about who you are, what you do, what you're all about?
Yeah. So my name is Christy. I am a dietitian, certified diabetes educator. I worked 10 years in diabetes management, serving a Native American population at a clinic that I was working at, and went into my business. I guess it's been like a little over 2 years. I started an Instagram and kind of started my business, and it just kind of flourished from there. And I never really agreed with the way people were treated in a clinical setting. I never liked the advice that either was or wasn't given. I didn't like the focus on weight loss when I know that people can manage their blood sugars without the focus on weight loss. When I started my business, I realized like I can help people with health promoting behaviors without focusing on weight loss, without shame and guilt that comes along with the diabetes diagnosis as it is. And I've been doing that ever since. I quit my full-time job about 8 months ago. And yeah, it just feels good to serve people in a way that feels more within integrity and more aligned.
I love that. I resonate with so much of that. Just our system in general is such a weight-centric model that it's really difficult to be able to offer the support that is true to you and is authentic and that you know is actually going to have that impact without the shame and guilt attached to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like it goes with any diagnosis really, or even if not a diagnosis, just like people trying to get help in general. But I feel like with diabetes, there's definitely that like this, like you did it to yourself kind of mentality, that not saying all doctors have it, obviously not saying all healthcare providers do, but something I hear from my clients often.
Hey, let's talk about that, because that is something that comes up so much with a lot of obesity related diseases, is the idea that you did it to yourself. It's your fault. If you live in a bigger body, you know, that's the reason you have cardiovascular disease. That's the reason that you have diabetes or cancer or all of the different diseases. So how do you approach that if you have clients come to you feeling like it's their fault, or if you hear people having those conversations?
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that I tell people all the time is that I have helped people with their diabetes management in all shapes and sizes. Like I have seen diabetes completely across the body spectrum, small bodies, large bodies. And so I think taking that shame and guilt out of it is really, really important, and educating people. I mean, people might think like, I'm in a larger body, this is why this happened to me. But I think hearing from someone who's worked in diabetes education for so long, that I've worked with people of all body shapes and sizes, I think helps people understand that, oh, it can really happen to anyone. And I would say that genetics is more of a factor than body size. There's just no place for that shame and guilt in that type of a diagnosis, because diabetes is already so complex. And if we just buckled it down to weight, Everyone in a larger body would have diabetes and no one in a smaller body would have one. And that's just like not what we see.
Totally. What are some of the other myths that you hear or that you see in those like diabetes support groups, or maybe that your clients come to and they say, okay, I've been doing XYZ things, and you might be like, okay, red flag, this is not what we need to be doing or should be doing.
I would say the biggest one is cutting out carbohydrates. You know, carbohydrates are our body's preferred energy source. And when we cut those out, it can put our body into a lot of stress, a lot of distress. It can increase our cortisol levels. It can actually worsen insulin resistance. Because when we are eating a diet that's low in carbohydrates, we're also eating a diet that's low in fiber. It would be really hard to get the amount of fiber we need a day by doing a low carb diet, because vegetables have carbohydrates in them. Fruit has vegetables in them. You know, whole grain breads, things that do have a lot of fiber, in a low carb diet, you'd be cutting those out. So with a low carb diet, that also equals more of like a higher saturated fat diet, a diet that's a little bit higher in like animal products, which can also worsen insulin resistance. So I would say that, you know, cutting out carbohydrates is probably that is the answer, that cutting out carbs, lowering them, is what's going to manage your blood sugars long-term is actually a huge myth and can actually worsen insulin resistance long-term.
Interesting. That's so interesting and so good to know. Do you think that like, obviously that's super relevant for your clients. Does that apply to the general population as well? Like when people, obviously we're in a fad season of keto right now. So what would kind of be your general recommendation for people that are thinking about keto?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, can't say that someone without it, I don't know, you know, it depends on person to person, because some people wouldn't have insulin resistance, but we do know that a low carb diet can worsen insulin resistance. So, and we also know that a low carb diet and a higher fat diet can worsen like cholesterol, blood pressure, things like that. And yeah, that can happen to the general public. So someone who doesn't have insulin resistance and does a keto diet, sure, that could definitely lead to insulin resistance, you know, even if they don't have it in the first place. But even more so, it can lead to things like high cholesterol and high blood pressure, which, you know, a lot of people are at risk for, especially if it's in their genetics.
Yeah. Do you focus on health promoting behaviors that may lead to weight loss? I know that some people really have a difficult time, and some people have a difficult relationship with exercise because of the pressure to exercise in order to lose weight. But we know that fitness is correlated with longevity and overall health status. So is that something that you talk about as well?
Yeah, I mean, exercise is so important. And, you know, it's kind of like how we talk about breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Like people like know this information, but when you have that like complicated relationship with food or with exercise, it makes it hard to implement it on a day-to-day basis. And so, you know, I really believe in body autonomy. I believe if someone wants to lose weight, that's totally up to them. I mean, I will never tell someone that they shouldn't be trying to lose weight. But in my practice and with my clients, that's not something I focus on, simply because a lot of health promoting behaviors can lead to weight loss, or maybe they won't. And I don't want someone's like worth or how they manage their blood sugars to depend if that happens or not. I would rather them look at their blood sugars and see if like what they're doing is working for them, regardless of their weight, and their weight completely aside. And then as far as exercise goes, I think, again, educating people on like why exercise is important for blood sugar management, but also for women, it's important for all of our bone, like our bone health. But for women, I mean, we start losing our bone health, we're more at risk for osteoporosis and bone issues. And something like strength training can really help keep the integrity of our bones there, helps our metabolism. It helps us have more lean muscle mass, which, you know, helps our metabolism, but also helps our blood sugars. So I think educating people on why it's important, completely setting weight loss aside, helps people like understand it at a deeper level.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it changes the dynamics too of how they show up and why they show up, because it can feel challenging to go to the gym, to be trying to incorporate movement or increasing, you know, your daily movement, when it is about what is happening on the scale. And we know that there's so many other things that go into that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, people ask me all the time, like, is my weight a reason why I have diabetes? And, you know, like, what are the risk factors? Like, why do I have it? And there's so many. I mean, genetics is a huge one. I will say like having more visceral fat, like around like your stomach area, can be a risk factor for diabetes. That doesn't mean that your weight is that risk factor. It means if, you know, we all have different body shapes, we all do. And some people carry weight in different parts of their body. And sometimes if you are someone who carries more weight, like in your abdominal area, that can be a risk factor for diabetes. Now, exercise can help get some more lean muscle mass in your body. That doesn't mean you have to lose weight. That doesn't mean you focus on weight loss, but even having less like fat tissue in your abdominal area can help like your risk factors for diabetes and can help your overall blood sugar management in general. Weight loss aside, though, not focusing on the number on the scale.
Right. So how do you explain the confounding variables or what might be happening when someone says to you, oh, well, my blood sugars were better when I lost weight. Therefore, it must be the weight.
For sure. I mean, you know, I could always ask someone, well, what were you doing that helped you lose that weight? And if they're like, I was drinking more water, I was eating more fiber, I was focusing more on protein, I was exercising. A lot of times those health promoting behaviors do lead to weight loss, especially if someone is coming to me and they're eating a diet that's maybe really high. I hate to say like processed food. I'm not against processed food, but if someone's like not really focusing on fiber, if they're not focusing on protein at their meals, if they're snacking a lot during the day, kind of mindlessly, if they're not moving their body, if they're drinking, you know, more sugary beverages. I mean, there's so many behaviors that might be inhibiting them from managing their blood sugars. And if they're like, okay, well, to lose weight, I need to drink more water, I need to move my body more. Those are the same things I would recommend for diabetes management, for blood sugar management. So yeah, there could be a correlation from the weight loss and and your blood sugars, but it likely is because you implemented those health promoting behaviors. It's not simply because of the weight loss.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so important.
I would also say that, you know, a symptom of super high blood sugar is weight loss, you know? And so there are people who have been like congratulated by their doctors for weight loss and they're actually suffering from a high blood sugar. So when blood sugars are running really high, that can make us lose a lot of our lean muscle mass. And so I've had people go to their doctor for unexplained weight loss and they actually have diabetes or their blood sugars are really high and they're being congratulated for the weight loss versus it being looked at as like, oh, that's a warning sign that your blood sugars are really high.
Wow. I think that's important for people to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people tell me like that's how they were diagnosed is that they had really unexplained weight loss and that's exactly what it was.
Wow. Crazy. Mm-hmm. How do you approach dietary modifications with your clients in a way that isn't restrictive?
Yeah, I think it's all about what can I add and like, what do I want? And then what can I add? That's something I like to tell people. And it's not just adding carbohydrates. It's also like, if you're sitting down for breakfast and you are like, I really want eggs. Okay, that's what you want, but that's not enough for breakfast. So what are you going to add? And I think like having that, what can I add mentality really helps people in the long run with their blood sugar management, but also with their satiety as well. You know, if we're just eating two eggs for breakfast, like, yeah, we might be full for an hour, but we're going to feel hungry shortly after that. And likely we're going to end up wanting more carbohydrates later in the day versus if we were just to have them at breakfast, it would be more satisfying and honestly help our blood sugars be a lot more stable. So I definitely take that what can I add approach with people and help them really focus on two blood sugar stabilizing nutrients that I focus on a lot is protein and fiber. And never negating that people need carbs. And if you're having a carb at a meal, say you want a donut for breakfast, okay, a donut is a carbohydrate that is not going to keep you full for 3 hours. So if you're having a donut, what can you add and have with the donut to make it a more well-rounded breakfast and a more balanced breakfast, both for your blood sugars, but again, for your satiety too?
Yeah, no, I love that. I have the exact same approach. Always thinking about nutrition by addition. What can we add?
Yeah.
Do you have any, like, are there any foods that you would make off limits?
No, I mean, you know, there are foods I recommend not having, let's say like soda. You know, soda is extremely high in carbohydrates. It's really hard to balance a soda. Not saying you can't, not saying that, you know, a soda is 100% off limits, but things that are very fast acting to our blood sugars, like juice or soda, can make managing our blood sugars really challenging. Mm-hmm. So there are things that I would recommend, like, not really having often or switching to like diet soda or something that's more sugar-free because that's going to have a lot less effect on your blood sugars and make it easier to manage. But I mean, I've had clients drink a soda and be able to balance it with like what they're eating, but it makes it really hard because soda is very fast acting. Like the sugar in a soda is very fast acting to our blood sugars.
I'm going to wanted to interrupt this episode for just a minute to invite you to start your food freedom journey, to truly discover what it's like to live in peace with food and accept your body. Maybe you've thought about what it would be like to live without food rules, but fear that you won't be able to control yourself around pizza, cookies, ice cream. Maybe you have a desire to eat without food guilt, but fear weight gain. That is why I created my 12-week group coaching program, a step-by-step roadmap to help you ditch the diet mentality and embrace food freedom. Inside the program, you have access to all the tools you need to help you understand your metabolism, eat healthy, satisfying meals, and never feel the need to go on another diet again. You also have access to one-on-one coaching with me to help design a custom game plan specifically for you. So if you're ready, I'd love for you to join me in the Food Freedom Collective. You can grab your spot by clicking the link in the show notes or DMing me the word freedom on Instagram. Whether you've tried intuitive eating in the past or you're sick of dieting and ready to discover what it's like to have a healthy relationship with food that isn't stressful, this program will transform your life. All right, now back to the episode. Do you ever dive into glycemic index with your clients?
I don't, simply because I think it kind of goes over people's head, and unless they have a chart in front of them, like, oh, yeah, where does this food fall on the glycemic index? It can be, I feel like they would have to have that chart in their pocket, like when they sit down to eat, to know where something falls. I also know that the glycemic index is pretty outdated. That's not something that was in, like, when I was studying to be a diabetes educator, not something that was like talked about in the standards of care or anything like that. And so, I mean, you know, people will ask me about the glycemic index, especially people who have dieted a lot of their life, because the glycemic index was huge when like Atkins came out and stuff, and like picking low glycemic index foods. Yeah. But not something I focus on now, just because I mean, people would have to have those foods memorized in order to know where they fall.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's not super helpful, like you said, going back to the idea of what can you add, you know, if we're hitting those like proteins, fats, and fibers, then generally speaking, you're going to be balancing your meals.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to feel satisfied. And when people start to do that, they start to feel more energy, and they do feel that satiety in between meals. If people tell me like, I'm super hungry right after breakfast, I'm like, you're likely not eating enough protein or fiber. Those are like the two first things I'd focus on.
Totally. Yeah. What are some of the other benefits that you find when, you know, when working with your clients and focusing on balancing their blood sugars? What are some of the other benefits that you find come out of that?
A huge one would probably be more energy. You know, if you are feeling really sluggish during the day, I mean, you know, food is fuel. It's not only fuel. Food is a lot of things, but we eat to have energy. I mean, that is where we get our energy from. If you are eating a way that's unbalanced, if you're not eating enough, if you're eating, you know, not enough protein, not enough fiber, not enough carbs, like you're going to feel that in your energy. And so I would say one of the most positives I see when people start balancing their meals is more energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I think that that's probably across the board, diabetes or not.
Yeah, across the board. I mean, I've always worked in diabetes management, but when I worked at a clinic, I saw people with everything, heart disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, but I mean, diabetes was the main one, but I saw people with tons of different conditions. And a lot of times the amount that they were not eating, or maybe they weren't eating during the day, you know, they're skipping meals during the day only to eat a ton at night. It's like, okay, all day they had no energy and they're feeling so sluggish all day. And then at night they sit down and they eat a ton of food because they're so hungry. And then they're feeling sluggish anyways, because they just ate way more than like their body really needed or wanted.
Totally. Yeah. It's interesting, that dynamic, because during the day is when we are using the most amount of energy, right? That's when our brain's working the most. We're typically the most active. At night is when you're, you know, maybe chilling on the couch, watching a show, or just putzing around the house. And that's typically when, you know, if you're in that cycle of under eating during the day, overeating at night, it just, yeah, it doesn't really make sense.
No. And from a blood sugar standpoint, you'll notice like lots of like roller coaster blood sugars. If you're doing that, like you'll notice like extreme highs, extreme lows, and that also correlates with your energy too.
Okay. This is a total random thought that just popped into my head, but I saw that you followed this guy. I can't even remember what his Instagram is, but I know when I describe him, you're going to know who I'm talking about. He has a CGM and he posts all of the foods that he eats with his reports. And I found it really interesting because some of them I honestly was surprised by. So I wonder, do you know who I'm talking about?
Is it usually just sit at a table and yes, just like something? Yeah. And I don't, I don't know. I thought he either had insulin resistance or type 1 diabetes, but he might not. I'm not exactly sure if he does or not, if we're talking about the same person. But people like that are wearing a CGM who don't have diabetes really do not need to be wearing one. They don't need to be micromanaging their blood sugars in that type of a way. It's not, I mean, I don't have diabetes, but I wore a CGM once to learn how to utilize the app and how to utilize, how to show people how to put it on. It was when I was training to be a diabetes educator. I found it really interesting. I mean, I watched my blood sugars for 2 weeks. I wanted to like look at the app, understand how to teach my clients how to use it. It was interesting, but I could see very quickly how that could become obsessive and just like looking at those numbers, dictating everything I was eating, even though I don't have diabetes and I had no reason to be doing that. We all have a fluctuating blood sugar. When we eat, our blood sugars go up, regardless if you have diabetes or not. And people on the internet, it sells. People who are trying to sell something, for instance, that wouldn't be with an Integrity for me, but if I were to wear a CGM and market myself online and say, like, this is what I'm doing. This is how I manage my blood sugars, but I don't have diabetes. People will look at me and be like, oh, I want to hire her. I want to work with her because she's wearing the CGM and she's doing all these things. But what's happening in my body is significantly different than what's happening in anyone else's body, especially someone with insulin resistance or diabetes. So that's not going to be super helpful. But there, I mean, there's so much craze around CGMs right now, and people just wearing them just to wear them. And we don't need to be micromanaging our blood sugars in that way.
I think that's really helpful advice because even I, like Richard, my boyfriend, was looking at this guy's page and going down the rabbit hole and sending me all of these videos. And I was just like, I mean, first of all, like you said, it's normal for your blood sugars to increase after you eat. That's what happens to everybody. And second, I just reading some of the comments too, it's just not helpful because how many of these people have diabetes? How many of these people don't have diabetes? And we're now just in the space of making people fearful and questioning everything that they're eating and balancing how they're balancing their meals and really questioning like the science that we do have about food and blood
Okay.
sugars.
Totally. I mean, if someone's online wearing a CGM and they eat an apple and they're showing like, look what my blood sugars did. It's like, well, yeah, an apple is a carbohydrate. Like that's normal that your blood sugars went up after eating an apple. Not something we need to fear. People fear their blood sugars increasing in general when that's a normal metabolic process. That would go for any of us, no matter your body shape, your body size, whether you have diabetes or not. Like any of us were to eat an apple and check our blood sugar, our numbers would increase from the time before we ate the apple to the time after we did. It's kind of just like a craze, and it's a huge, unfortunately, a huge money maker on social media. It's a huge money maker.
When you hear someone say sugars are bad for you, whether it is somebody that has diabetes or not, how do you unpack that? Like, what do you go into like the mechanism by which sugars can have maybe some sort of a health impact on your body? Or like, where do you go with that?
Yeah, I mean, but it's really broad because sugar can be found in naturally in things like milk, and it can be found naturally in things like fruit. Then there's added sugar, and looking at that, I think it takes a very individualized approach to talk about sugar because some people might be like, I eat a diet really high in sugar. And it's like, once you unpack that, it's like, what did they mean by a diet that's high in sugar? Are they referring to like processed foods? Are they referring to soda? Are they referring to candy? Are they just referring, I think unpacking and also unpacking like sugar, no matter where it's coming from, whether it's coming from a banana or whether it's coming from a Snickers bar, is broken down the same way. I mean, sure, the nutrient components of, a banana and a Snickers bar are different, right? A banana is a lot higher in fiber, has a lot more nutrients, things like that. But at the end of the day, they both have sugar in them. And how that sugar is broken down and affects our blood sugars is the same. It's the nutrient profile of those two foods that have a different impact on our blood sugar, if that makes sense. One thing I like to focus more on is like added sugar and helping people with diabetes focus less on or focus more on looking at added sugar. So if you use like yogurt, for example, there's so many different types of yogurt out there, and it can get really confusing on like what would be best for blood sugars. So I like to talk about like, yogurt's already going to have sugar in it because it has lactose in it. And we want to avoid having yogurt that's all of a sudden has like 16 grams of added sugar and has like 5 grams of protein. We kind of want to swap that and choose something that has a little bit less added sugar and a lot higher in protein. Not to fear added sugar, but that added sugar can definitely affect your blood sugars. And take something like yogurt, that's a really easy, high protein part of like a breakfast or a snack, all of a sudden can affect your blood sugars greatly if it's more of like a high sugar, low protein snack, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's super helpful. What are some of, I know you kind of briefly touched on this, genetics, of course, and then visceral fat, but are there any other risk factors for diabetes?
I mean, yeah, like it could be, I mean, I always like to say like your social determinants of health. I mean, how easily you're able to get care, get yearly lab work done. You know, again, genetics is a huge one. Race and ethnicity is another one. And a lot of it is, you know, a lot of it is lifestyle based. You know, are you moving, you know, have you spent a lot of your life having a healthy relationship with exercise and you've moved your body a lot of your life? Do you have a really sedentary job? Your stress level. I mean, all of those things can be risk factors for diabetes. When I worked at a clinic, I remember I had a patient who had pre-diabetes for like 20 years. Like she just kind of lived in this like pre-diabetes range and she never went above that. And she lost her husband and her blood sugars, her A1C just shot up. And she had a diabetes diagnosis like 2 months after her husband dying. And it's like, of course that was stress related. There's nothing that makes me believe she did anything different in this like 2 month time span that she hadn't been doing for 20 years to get out of the pre-diabetes range into the diabetes range, except for like stress and grief. And so, yeah, all of those can be risk factors.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And I think that that goes for a lot of diseases as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I think things like stress and sleep and things, I don't think that those things are talked about, even though they greatly affect our health. I mean, they can affect our blood pressure. They can affect our cholesterol. They can affect our mental health and our overall well-being. And they can also affect our blood sugars too.
Because it's not sexy. It's not sexy to be online being like, you got to manage your stress levels.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you got to sleep 7 hours a night. You know, it's like, we all know that, but you know, something I talk about in my group programs is like sleep hygiene and like making sure you have like a wind down routine and that, you know, we don't want to just like overlook sleep just because it's sleep. Like we want to make sure that we do have a sleep routine, that we are getting consistent, like 7 hours a night of sleep.
Yeah. I love that. Can you talk a little bit about your group program? What do you offer? Like if there's people that are listening who have diabetes or who knows someone that has diabetes, what do you offer for support?
Yeah, I actually have so many resources I have like master classes, I have guides, because I know that everyone learns different. Not everyone needs like a group coaching setting. But if you're someone who has diabetes, who doesn't feel like you've been educated about having diabetes, you don't know what your numbers should be, you don't know what screenings you should be getting on a yearly or bi-yearly basis, if you just feel confused about nutrition and all of the things that affect your blood sugars, then I would say like a group coaching or some type of like education setting would be best. It's the program I run is 12 weeks. It's for anyone with pre-diabetes or diabetes. And each week is focused on something different. So we focus a lot on nutrition, obviously, because nutrition and exercise are what's going to impact your blood sugars the most. But we also focus on screenings. There are recommended screenings that people with diabetes should be getting that most of them don't even know they should be getting. Mm-hmm. We focus on sleep, stress, exercise. I actually have two guest speakers. I have a psychologist come and talk about stress and developing self-care plans for yourself to help manage like diabetes burnout, navigate the medical stigma that comes with diabetes. And she also has diabetes herself. So I love having her. And then I also have a body image coach who comes in and talks about like grieving your body. You know, when someone has a new diabetes diagnosis, they're grieving what they wanted, right? Like no one wants that diagnosis. So there's like a grieving process of like, you know, a lot of people tell me like, I feel like my body let me down. I feel like my body did this. And so she comes in and talks about that too, which is also really helpful.
Is it Bree?
It is Bree.
I love Bree. We're actually recording a podcast in like 2 hours today.
Oh, tell her I said hi.
I will.
Yeah, I'm actually doing a body image course that she does, or like a body image bootcamp she does for providers. So I'm going to be taking that class by her, but she's the one who does my guest speaking.
Cool. That's so awesome. Okay. Well, I think that's super helpful to know. We'll get your contact information at the very end for anyone that is interested in looking into it more, but I am curious what you would advise people, if anyone is listening or anyone is like wanting to get a better idea of what their next step might be, if they're maybe not quite ready to jump into group coaching, or they're just like, what can I do today to help support myself, to help support my blood sugars, to help manage my diabetes? What would your like first piece of advice be?
My first piece of advice would be to focus on the three meals a day that are in front of you. How can you balance them with protein and fiber and start moving your body? Those would probably be the first two things. If someone's like, I'm not ready to invest anywhere, I'm not ready to work with anyone, I don't want to see a dietitian. I mean, an individualized approach is what's going to be the most useful, but some people are not ready for that. And that's so understandable. So I would say focusing on what protein and fiber can I add to each one of my meals, and how can I move my body every day, even if it's for 10 minutes, is where I would start.
Love that. Love that. I love that you say even for 10 minutes, because I think too, a lot of people get in their heads about, okay, well, if I'm going to be exercising, I got to make sure I'm at the gym for an hour, or I'm walking for half an hour, or it's got to be like something super specific and rigid. And it totally doesn't have to be.
No. And the research doesn't show that. The research really shows like 10 minutes moving your body can help your blood sugars tremendously. I mean, help your overall health, but blood sugar wise, really, like, it doesn't have to be an hour in the gym.
Love that. Amazing. Okay. Digressing from diabetes, the last question that I ask every guest that is on the podcast is, what does self-love mean to you? And what does this look like in real life? How do you practice self-love?
That's a good question. I feel like self-love is, you know, putting your needs and your priorities first. And I think some people might find that selfish, and I just like don't find that selfish at all. And I feel like the more you fill your own cup up, the more you can pour into other people. So I would, in my personal life, I mean, I'm really good at boundaries. Mm-hmm. Boundaries, I think, are really important. I also, you know, I try to do something every day that is only for me. Whether that's like getting out and walking my dogs, or like watching a stupid show on Netflix that's like just trashy and mindless. I try and do something every day that's just like, this is my time and this is what I'm going to do. And then I know I can pour into other people a lot better when I fill my own cup up first.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is so important. And boundaries are friggin' hard. Like,
boundaries are the worst. They're so the worst.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you have your own business.
Yeah. And I think like boundaries really help. It helps your relationship with people. It's like, okay, this is what will work for me, and this isn't what will work for me. And I think people have a lot more respect for you when you do have boundaries, even if it's hard. And it's really hard when it's like family and like people you're close to.
Yeah, totally. I love that. Okay, Christy, thank you so much for being here. Can you just provide your contact info? Where can people find you? Where can people learn more about what you offer?
Yeah, mainly I am on Instagram. So my Instagram handle is type2diabetes.nutritionist. I can also be reached at dietitianchristy@gmail.com.
Amazing. Okay. I will be sure to link that in the show notes. And if anyone has any questions for Christy, you can reach out to her, I'm sure, via Instagram. She would love to chat with you. Thank you again, Christy, so much for being here. This was such a great conversation.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in. If you guys got value from the show, I would love for you to rate and share it. And if you have any questions about the conversation today, you can always find me on Instagram or Facebook @ Chelsea Glubish. Catch you on the next one.